He is a vacuum cleaner salesman. Why is he in Afghanistan? You know, so yeah, binge watching does have its faults, folks.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, how's it going tonight?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Doing well. Yeah, we're here for another edition of Trailer Junkies. How have things been?
Pretty good. A little hectic evening this evening. Had locked myself out of my car while I was trying to edit last week's episode in the car, waiting for my daughter to get out of her acting lesson. But
that's always fun.
Thank you, AAA, for helping out there.
So let me guess, you were sitting in the seat, keys in the ignition, probably had what, laptop sitting on your lap, and by the time you had to get out of the car, you figured you were in the car for so long, you forgot the keys were in the ignition.
Yes.
You got out, locked it, walked away.
Yes.
Am I right?
Totally right. Totally right. I went through the automatic thing of locking the door from the inside, and my glasses were off, and I was deep in editing.
Nice. Well, at least you get into your work. I can't say that I haven't done the same. I know I've done that a few times and locked myself out.
How about you? How are the fires?
Fires. Yeah, it's smoky here. I work at a high school and our school district here on the central coast of California, a little bit north of Santa Barbara. But they closed our school district because the poor air quality, pretty nasty. You know, I grew up in Chicago and we'd get snow and snow days, and here we get fire days and smoke days.
It's like there's no upside to fire days.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's just no fun about it. Everybody's wearing masks. Kind of sucks, but yeah, it is what it is. We'll get through it. We always do. So what's in store for us?
This week we have 12 Strong.
12 Strong. Yeah. Looks like something I'd like to see.
12 Strong, : the declassified true story of the horse soldiers. So a very long title. And like a lot of military movies, I guess it has numbers in it, like 13 Hours and Zero Dark 30.
Oh, yeah. That's a good observation. I like that.
We've known each other for a long time, but I've never said thank you for your service. So I'll take this on-air opportunity to say that to you for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. I did serve in the Army. I was in the Cavalry.
Cavalry. So this is close to your heart then, right?
A little bit, yeah. And, you know, looking at this one, Special Forces, definitely not what I did. So these dudes are pretty intense. You know, just a brief background. So I was at Fort Irwin, which is the National Training Center, and we trained everybody before they got deployed, you know, to Iraq, Afghanistan, and so on. And we were the opposition forces, live fire training, all that kind of stuff. And I've seen these guys there, you know, various special forces, Navy SEAL type dudes. And let me say, I am not one of them. They are very big, very muscular, very large, very intense. The whole, I mean, what you think in the movies is very true to what you see in real life. I mean, these dudes are highly professional. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing this one, and I very well may see this one on opening weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you say Special Forces, these guys,
these are, you know, they're Green Berets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So Special Forces team, there's 12 guys in a unit. There's typically an officer who's a commander. You're going to have some sort of a warrant officer. And then the rest below that are going to be enlisted. All, I mean, there's no privates or anything. I mean, they're all NCOs. And everybody's kind of trained in a various type of profession. So you're going to have medics. You're going to have, like, guys who, I mean, they're all warriors. But some of them are trained in things like construction to medicine, to a wide range of disciplines. Because
any dressage in there?
Any what?
Dress dressage, horse dancing.
Horse dancing, you know, and that's what I was going to get into. So as I was watching this, and they said, you know, these guys didn't ride horses and all this stuff. I'm thinking, I mean, these dudes are so trained, and maybe it's true. Maybe they didn't do this. I don't know. I guess it's a true story. Well, it is a true story, but the one thing is, like, we go on vacation and, like, we get away from work. They go on vacation and they do things to enhance their work. I guess I'll go to automotive school to learn how to, like, rebuild a carburetor, you know, because, like, you might be in the middle of nowhere and you have to rebuild a carburetor. You got to know how to do that. And their vacation is auto school. I find it hard to believe these dudes hadn't ridden horses. Eh, whatever.
So is this like War Horse?
War Horse. Or more like the Trojan horse, right? But anyway, jumping into it, though, the one thing I was wondering, so they show the girl talking to the dad and, you know, they're kind of loving each other. And all of a sudden, the mom kind of looks at the TV and goes, what is going on TV? And of course, they show 9/11. And I think that needs to be shown because that was the impetus to get into the whole thing, of course. But the one thing that I wonder about is why the release date at Christmas and not the release date sometime in September? Because 9/11 happened and even days later, we were boots on the ground in Afghanistan with these guys, you know, coincide with the timing.
Yeah, I don't know. Movie slots and movie scheduling is done so many years in advance for so many blockbusters.
No, that makes sense. I mean, I guess, you know, you're looking at the business and marketing side of things. But the other thing I'm wondering, too, so you're looking at the headliner, Chris Hemsworth, and he's the captain, you know, he's the officer. And then the other one, though, would be Michael Shannon. You know, he's the chief warrant officer, you know, Hal Spencer's his character's name. But I can't help but think about Boardwalk Empire when I see him in this, you know, and he's there selling, you know, being the preacher man, you know, selling his wares door to door. You know, at some point, is his face typecasted?
I guess for you, he is. I'm not there yet with him. He's done enough different things as far as the movies that I've seen him in and the roles that he's played that I think this fits into his general. I mean, for me, Chris Hemsworth is probably the one that hits me as the most typecast kind of, you know, this is another one of his superhero, superhuman kind of roles. So,
yeah.
I have a harder time believing that Thor is you know, a captain or whatever he said he was.
Sure.
In Afghanistan than Michael Shannon. So that's the hard part for me.
His look? Yeah, certainly fits like a special forces look, I guess, if you had to, you know, especially in the film side of things. However, the typecast with Chris Shannon, you know, the problem that I see with it is it's not
Michael Shannon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Michael Shannon. Chris Hemsworth and Michael Shannon. Yeah, I got him backwards there. Yeah, the problem isn't that he's typecast. The problem is I binge watch. And after you spend about like 6 weeks watching seven seasons of some show, you believe that character really exists, let me tell you. And all of a sudden you see him in another movie and you're thinking, that is just wrong. He doesn't belong there. He is a vacuum cleaner salesman. Why is he in Afghanistan? You know, so yeah, binge watching does have its faults, folks.
I can't do it.
Binge watch?
I can't binge watch.
We've gotten to the point, Clarissa and I, we've gotten to the point where we binge watch, but we binge watch one episode of one show a night. So let's say we're watching a couple of shows. We will only do one episode that night, and then the other show gets its episode.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, the reason we do that is because there were times we sat and watched like 4 or 5 episodes or whatever, you know, like Big Bang Theory, we get the Blu-ray. Man, we just go through them and we just watch them, you know, back to back to back, over and over. Well, before you know it, I swear to God, you think you're living in that apartment. And it just gets to the point where, okay, wait a minute, I got to move out.
Right.
You know, I need to cut ties with these people. I don't live there. They're not my friends. I actually do have a life. Let me watch one episode and get on with it, because once you're dreaming of living with these folks, you know, or you're dreaming that it's the 1920s or whatever, because you've watched so much Boardwalk Empire, you know, you kind of have to take a, you have to take a little bit slower. And I mean that, and that's just self-regulation at some point. But anyway, back to the trailer at hand.
Yeah. So does 12 Strong, does it seem plausible to you that they...
Oh, no, it totally seems plausible. Yeah, I mean,
on horses, well, taking on tanks? I mean, that's... I don't know.
Speaking from mild experience, I mean, just doing some training with these kind of folks, some of the thing is their whole premise is to embed themselves with the locals and, you know, going back when Kennedy... created, you know, the Green Berets, and John Wayne kind of took the helm. The whole point of the Green Berets or Special Forces is to train and advise foreign militaries and foreign fighters to fight on our behalf.
Oh, yeah.
And that's exactly what they did, because in the hunt for bin Laden, what we were doing was... we were looking at joining with the Northern Alliance, becoming allies with them, you know, between, I mean, it's not just, you know, these 12 guys. I mean, the CIA was involved in all this kind of stuff. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. But, you know, these guys joined forces with the Northern Alliance to fight and defeat the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. The political side of things and should we be there and all that kind of stuff, that's a whole other argument. But yeah, it's totally plausible the way they did everything, because they just go there with what they have, you know, and they get in there with what's on their back and they get dropped off by helicopter and it's the end of it. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's intense. I mean, these dudes are certainly the real deal, you know, and probably one of the reasons why in the news and everything, you know, and the Navy SEALs who got bin Laden and these guys and Delta Force and the whole nine. I mean, like, yeah, that's what it's like, what movies are made of. And obviously here's another movie, you know, that they're making about it.
Yeah. I like that this about minute 43 in, they kind of shift to a montage space where they're doing a little action montage, but it's right after the enemy forces blow themselves up.
Well, can we back up a little bit?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Yeah, yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about though was, which I think is pretty impactful, is, you know, you see, you know, obviously, again, going back to the impetus of how everything happened, which was 9/11, but then you get to the families, which I think is pretty intense, you know, with regard to. You know, they're saying like, oh, I don't want you to leave. And, you know, oh, you better come back to me. And, you know, all these kind of things, you know, this stuff. It's kind of like when you go to what's the movie, the Mel Gibson one where they were in the Vietnam one with the first infantry. Or, I'm sorry, the first cavalry. One of the issues I have with these kind of movies is when people are leaving for war or they're dying. You know, and you see it a lot, you know, it's like when everybody's leaving or when they're dying, they have these profound and impactful statements that they make. I mean, does that happen? I don't know. I haven't been, well, leaving at times, sure, you leave your family for various things. I mean, not always war, but you leave for, I don't know, you take plane trips for vacations and things. I mean, but like in dying, I haven't had too many people die in my arms, so I couldn't tell you that one either. But why is it that whenever these things go down, they're the most profound statements you've ever heard in your life, you know? And that kind of annoys me about these kind of movies.
I think the thing about movies, and I think we touched on it a little bit when we talked about read the book before the movie, even when there's a real life story, a true story, and there's a movie about that true story, real life usually takes too many tangential turns and has too many characters going on in it. So oftentimes a movie has to be true to itself,
right.
to the movie. So it has to be like, oh, that person, the only thing they did in their life was say that one line to our main character
in the movie.
We don't need to figure out who in real life, there's a real person who walked up to somebody and said, "You're going." So let's take this trailer for example. Your wife and you, if you die when you're fighting, your wife and you are going to be mad if you don't sit down and write this letter. If Michael Shannon wasn't the guy that actually said that to this crew of people, it doesn't matter if it's somebody else. Let's give that line to Michael Shannon, because to streamline this movie, to make move and to not bother with introducing another character, let's give that line to one of our main characters so that we can just like dispense with the pleasantries of getting to know somebody else who's only going to come in and say one line and then leave us and we aren't going to ever see them again. So I think there's a lot of compacting that happens in movies because you're trying to boil a story down into its best story.
Yeah, and you only have 2 hours to tell it as opposed to, you know, a lifetime.
You only have 2 hours to tell it, yeah. And you only have 2 hours to tell it. You know, you book, you have as many pages as you want to write. And in a trailer, you only have 2 minutes to tell it. So I think this follows this very simple narrative trailer storytelling where it goes through, you know, leaving for war and, you know, the families that you're leaving behind and all the different stories they have going on. They do a good job of like breaking it down. The young couple, the family man, and then the older divorced, what is he called? The petty officer, did you say? With his
chief warrant officer, son.
The chief warrant officer. And he's
Shannon.
And he's estranged from his son, but his son doesn't want him to leave. So there's a lot of tension that plays out in those few scenes in the beginning, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think you're right too when you look at, you know, family. And I think that's the biggest part of it, is people leaving to go fight these wars and they're leaving families behind. You know, here mostly it's wives and girlfriends or, you know, whatever it might be. But I mean, you're looking at people, I mean, yeah, they got kids, they're just family men, you know? I mean, sure they're in the Army or the Marine Corps or whatever they may be in, or, you know, other branches, but to some extent, we're all warriors, and to some extent, like, we're just kind of doing our thing here as Americans, and, you know, and I think you saw that in American Sniper. You know, he comes home, and he's like, this doesn't make sense. Everybody's acting like nothing's going on. We're just going to the mall, you know, and he's, like, all angry at society because nobody cares what's going on in Afghanistan, and I guess that one was Iraq. Mm-hmm. But he's right. I mean, it's like, yeah, the average person, it's not that they don't care. It's just they're just so far removed from it. And it's not like it's World War II where we have this ever-present and dangerous enemy in Germany or Japan the way it was. I mean, it's just a different type of war. But with that said, I think the trailer does a good job of showing that, you know, family matters, and yeah, they're going to miss each other, and this could be a long time and they may never see each other again. I mean, I think it sets that stage pretty well.
Yeah, it's great. A great intro, and it doesn't even bother me that it's a kind of a more linear storytelling than what we had, you know, in Molly's Game and
can I make one aesthetic thing on the trailer too? And
definitely.
So it goes from the couple lying in bed, then it jumps to they're getting ready to deploy, and they show the helicopters, and what it does, it shows the ceiling fan shadow on the carpeted floor, which fades into a bunch of helicopters. I just thought that was brilliant, you know, as far as an aesthetic piece, because, you know, it has the appearance that you get, like, immediately you get the idea that it's a helicopter.
Yeah. And not only that, you have the audio. If you listen the sound of the jets even starts well before.
And that transition from I'm with my loved one in my home to here is the helicopters to fly us to our mission. They're already overseas at that point. And it's one of those things where it's here we are ready to embark on this battle. I mean, I thought that transition in the trailer anyway. I mean, I don't know how they do it in the movie, but in the trailer, I thought was just brilliant. And they show the guys loading up, you know, all their gear. They're getting on the Chinooks and all that stuff ready to fly out. And then, you know, they kind of show, you know, they have all their gear, you know, night vision, you know, the whole thing. I mean, it's kind of, it's I would say, typical military styled movie making. You know, overall, I think they're doing okay. But then all of a sudden it jumps into, you know, here we are, you know, we're a bunch of dudes on horseback overlooking a valley that appears to be on fire and exploding. I mean, or is it dust? I don't know. You tell me. We're at about 57 seconds into it.
Yeah, it kind of transitions into a more typical traditional war movie in the middle section there, you know. The fact that they're on horseback isn't really even showcased very much right at the beginning.
Yeah, and it's showing a lot of, you know, the action, the shooting. One thing I think is kind of cool, if you look at, at a minute two, there's a guy who takes a step. And, you know, you see the camouflage pants, the desert camouflage pants, and you see what more or less could be just civilian hiking boots. You know, a quick aside, I think they got that right, because Special Forces doesn't necessarily wear your typical military-issued boots, because the tracks, you know, they want to show tracks that show as something other than American. So you look at,
they get local.
I don't know. I don't want to say Walmart specials, but, you know, you look at something from REI or, you know, a decent hiking boot, they're going to have a different track than a military boot. And then, you know, the enemy might not know that Americans are in the country. The second thing I wanted to say, though, is I think that's a good metaphor to say these are our first, or this is our first step into this war. I mean, because you're looking,
it's literally the boots on the ground.
It's literally
right?
the boots
I
on
mean,
the ground.
That's
and the it's term. Like our first step. I mean, we're finally here, you know, after 9/11. Well, okay, finally, like 2 days later. But what I mean is, like, what are we now? 2017. And this is September 2011. So we're talking, you know, more than 16 years ago. And it's kind of like saying to the audience today, like, this is the step that got us into the quagmire that we kind of got into, you know. And again, I don't want to get into the political side of things and stuff. I mean, that's not the intent. But we got into this battle that we got into, this war that we got into. And that shows that this is, it's kind of like the metaphor to say, hey, we stepped into it and we're still here, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Afghanistan still.
Well,
going
and
strong,
even,
right?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's going strong. I mean, we're definitely, I mean, the Obama administration
drew down,
got us out of there in a lot of ways, but just, I mean, you know, nobody's ever conquered Afghanistan. That's the thing. I mean, the Russians haven't, we haven't. Alexander the Great didn't, you know, I mean, with the terrain, it's so tribal. I mean, it's impossible to conquer.
Back of the trailer, I like those two transitions, those two moments you picked out, the transitions from being at home to shipping off, and then like the first steps into the war. And there's a bunch of traditional action movie scenes, but the horses thing is that's the difference, right? That's the thing that makes this movie different than everything else. And
well, I think so. You know, I don't know the story too much. I mean, I've read a few books. I don't know the authors off the top of my head, but The Hunt for Bin Laden was one where they meet up with the Northern Alliance. And that was key to a lot of our successes in Afghanistan, because we didn't have the troop buildup yet. I mean, to move a division or more from the United States, you know, you're going to move the 1st Infantry Division or, you know, the 4th Infantry Division or something. I mean, you're looking at tanks and all this armor, and you're looking at, I mean, it's a huge lift, you know, ships and aircraft and all this stuff to move these tens of thousands of troops into country. These guys are there on an aircraft with a go bag, and they land and they're ready to fight, you know. But anyway, Robin Moore, The Hunt for Bin Laden. So reading that book, he kind of laid down pretty well how we met with the Northern Alliance. And yeah, I mean, these guys are on horseback and they're doing what they needed to do, fighting tanks or fighting whatever the Taliban had to throw at them. I mean, it was incredible. And the one thing that I like is there's humor breaks. So when they talk about who has ridden a horse.
And Michael Pena is great in there when he's like, does it have a name? I need to know the horse's name, you know? So it's fun moments, yeah. And then it brings you right back with a guy like suiciding himself to take out a bunch of people, you know, like out of nowhere. But I do like at that moment, right when the guy pulls the grenade and yells and.
Well, you know, here's two things. One, you don't even know if those are a part of the same scene.
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a trailer. Which is the good and bad of trailers. It appears as though this is the movie. The second, those scenes could be an hour apart from each other.
It's definitely built like that. You know, it's built like it could be all over the place. They're still in a huge firefight, and who knows whether this firefight's part of another firefight. But the thing that I fell in love with this trailer was the song that they chose. They went with a cover of Tom Petty's Won't Back Down, and it was just like this slow ballad version of it.
It's an incredible song that they chose because of the lyrics and Tom Petty passing
perfect
away.
Timing.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, it's like they probably would have chose it anyway, but I don't know. I agree with you on that. You know, the other side of it is, you know, they really show, I think they drive home the fact that the odds they're up against. And then you see, you know, they kind of have that split in there where they say Bruckheimer and, you know, and they refer back to Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
And Black Hawk Down was a kind of a similar story where, you know, you had these Delta operators and these Army Rangers that were in Mogadishu, essentially outnumbered. And, you know, the whole thing, and it's like kind of how do we fight to get out of here, you know, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't say everybody, but people listening have seen that.
To this day, that Black Hawk Down scene at the end where they're getting
incredible.
Overrun incredible. Is one of the scariest war movies scenes that I've seen. And the card here, it's a legacy cell. It's telling you, you know, Bruckheimer produced this other movie. But I think it's also doing double duty here because it's telling you that we're going to show you some actors that normally in, you know, in Thor, you know, Thor is going to live. But you don't know who's going to pull out of this one. You know, we're more in Saving Private Ryan space than a superhero space. Some of these guys might not make it out of here. And that's what you're paying to see who makes it and how they make it and how they tell that story.
You know, and that's a good point with these kind of movies. I mean, you have the lead, but does the lead always have to live? What I'm getting at is, you know, you look at the TV series 24, and the joke that I've always had with 24 was no one's safe but Jack Bauer.
Right.
You know, everybody could die, but Jack would never die, you know? But I mean, what if he died? I mean, like, yeah, it would just destroy the show. I mean, in a movie like this, I mean, the primary lead, if Hemsworth was the guy, you know, let's say, I mean, maybe not the first guy to die. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, there's going to be other things to happen, but it's seriously impactful when you look at a movie like American Sniper. He dies and they show the funeral procession. I mean, it was like, yeah, the guy was a war hero. I mean, he had so many kills and he saved so many people and, you know, all these things. And then for something so, you know, I don't know if I want to call it foolish, but I mean, yeah, you know, it's like he gets killed by in a shooting range over
nothing.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was to me to see the hero of the movie die in
an unspectacular way.
In such a way. Yeah, in an unspectacular way and in such a humbling way. Yeah, I mean, you're watching the movie and you're like blubbering while they're showing the funeral procession and you're like crying and everything. You can't even believe
that's
how a movie like this would end.
I don't think I would see it opening weekend because, again, we talked about family and there's just a lot of war movies out there, and I don't know. I think now is a perfect time to do September 11th movies. It feels like it's far enough along, but just personally for me, it'll always be too soon. So even seeing those two towers at the beginning of this is too soon for me.
Probably like our grandparents with
Pearl Harbor. Yeah,
Pearl
exactly.
Harbor, you know?
I mean, you know, knowing that my kids are now celebrating Patriots Day on September 11th and they're already, you know, distanced from it. You know, it's something that's happened before their lifetime. So it's a strange thing to have so ingrained in our lives, and yet your kids aren't even talking about it yet because they're too young. But my kids in school, they talk about it as a separate kind of another kind of Patriots Day. So it's interesting.
But looking at the trailer, so we're about a minute 45 into it, and there's the scene where there's, you know, four guys. One of them is a Northern Alliance. Three look like American Special Forces, probably are. They look like our characters in the movie. And it looks as though they just called in an airstrike to whatever, napalm or something. I don't even know if they use napalm anymore, but they call in some airstrike. And the dudes are kind of like, all right, yeah, we called that in. The explosion
behind
is enormous,
them, yeah.
And we're just going to casually walk away. You know, like, I don't know about you, but if that explosion is going off, I'm going to be either like, oh my God, that is amazing, or hightailing it out of there. You know, I'm not going to be just slow, like half slow-mo walking away.
Yeah.
You know, it's cinematic effect, sure.
Yeah, did you see Lone Survivor? I kept thinking about that movie when I was watching this.
Oh, yeah. Lone Survivor was good too. I mean, what was that one where they got found out by like goat herders, but the goat herders were connected to the Taliban?
Yeah. And you know, I'm a huge Peter Berg fan, so Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg together for that one was amazing. But again, you don't know who's going to pull out of that. You don't know who's going to make it, who's not. And just the beating that the guys that even if you make it through, the beating that you take getting there is kind of an amazing testament.
Yeah. And then, you know, looking at about 2 minutes, 7 seconds or so, 2 minutes, 8 seconds. So the one Northern Alliance, and he's looking at Chris Hemsworth,
mm-hmm.
He's kind of like tapping a hand grenade or something at his chest, you know, but it's not. I mean, or it's a fish, one or the other, and I doubt that's what it is either. But he's kind of saying that, you know, every warrior starts here.
Yeah, the greatest weapon is
your
heart, he says.
Yeah, the greatest weapon is your heart, exactly, you know. The greatest weapon starts here, you know. And
so what do you think about the guy shooting from horseback? Do you think it's as believable as the marksmanship in, like, Captain Phillips?
See, Captain Phillips. And the Navy SEALs were there, and the ocean's pitching and rolling, but they make the kills on the Somali pirates. But those were calculated and timed, where these are like a full gallop, and they're just running and gunning and getting kills. I think it's a very different scenario.
Yeah, when I heard that Captain Phillips stuff, though, it was amazing. Like, they were timing it, like you said, to the ebb and flow of the waves and all the...
Yeah, or the pitch and roll.
The pitch and roll, sorry. layman terms. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch Hemsworth on a horse holding his, what is it? Rifle?
His,
no, I don't understand.
Yeah, his M4.
M4, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
his M4 and just like taking aim and not even like spraying bullets. It's just like, I think he just pops one off.
Well,
the shot that we see, right?
And not just Hemsworth. I mean, you're looking at some of the other dudes too. And like I said, they're at a full gallop, just hitting the trigger, shooting. And the implication, the way the trailer's cut together, is that they're riding, shooting, and you see the kills happening. I'm not saying they're not going to hit anybody, but it is highly unlikely that you are at a full gallop, one hand, not even the butt's not even in your shoulder, one hand on the pistol grip. Shooting, and they're just, you know, and they're picking off Taliban. I find it hard to believe. But, you know, hey, it's Hollywood, and that's how Hollywood rolls.
That but is.
Like I said, the Captain Phillips stuff, though, I think was probably a little more accurate because the pitch and roll of the waves, the timing, you know, you're up, you the guy's head passes through the scope, you're down, it passes through, you're up, and it kind of goes back and forth a dozen times, whatever. You get your timing, and you know the way the motion in the ocean's kind of going, and bam, you pop off the run, mm-hmm. and you hit him. But the amazing thing there was, it wasn't just one seal hit one pirate. There were two guys that shot at the exact same time and hit two different pirates. I mean, that was incredible.
Skill.
Very skilled. Very skilled. Very practiced. Lots and lots of practice. The other implication is that they've never ridden horses. All of a sudden, I don't know what the time frame is, but now they're masters of, what did you call it earlier? Dressage?
Dressage.
Now they're masters of dressage, and the way they can ride from never having ridden, and now they're just killing everybody off horseback. I mean, I don't know. It seems a little implausible to me.
Implausible, but fun.
Ted, what is your three-word review for this week?
So for my three-word review for 12 strong, I think I'm going to go with Thor's War Horses.
Thor's War Horses. So not Thor's Dressage?
No, Dressage. Yeah, it's only two words. So yeah, Thor's War Horses to pull in the Spielberg legacy cell with the War Horse.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And to pull in Marvel and all the good stuff. Anyway, I guess that's a wrap for tonight. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I look forward to next week. Any idea that we can talk about, give everybody a little teaser for what's coming next week?
Next week, we're going to get into the kids space. Hopefully a four-quadrant movie that the whole family can enjoy.
Nice. I always like some of those kid movies because, yes, they're for children, but they certainly bring in adult humor that the kids don't pick up on. But sometimes you see the parents rolling in the aisles just laughing.
Totally.
That's how I do it. Yeah.
Goes straight over the kid's head and it's all right.
Yeah. And you see it with planes and cars. Those are the two ones, planes and cars. And there's tons of adult humor in those, which is pretty funny.
Yeah. My daughter wanted to guest on the next one, but I said it's a little too soon. So maybe if one of the later kids ones, she'll guest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they'll have to watch and kind of give their little thing. But no, that'd be cool. And, you know, they can have like a little 2-minute little spot, 3-minute spot or something as a guest in a way. Or I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Awesome.
Yeah, that'd be
fun. All right. Well, until next week, we have a little update as well. We are not on Spotify yet. That's yet to come. But we are on Stitcher. So look up Trailer Junkies Podcast on Stitcher.
Google Music, and iTunes.
Awesome. Till next week.
You have a good night and goodbye. We'll see you next week.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks this week to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.